AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. On your favorite radio station or your preferred digital device, AgriTalk is live every weekday.
And in fact, AgriTalk is live right now, beloved listener. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate you. Davis Michelson here. I'm in for Chip. He's out today. He'll be back tomorrow. Don't you worry. He'll have a farmer forum tomorrow morning. And this afternoon, I mentioned it just right at the end of that little hit there with Brian Grady. But Brian and I are going to talk about, we got reports coming up this week. Brian and I are going to talk about the reports. And I just want to, I want to deep dive into the mind of Grady this afternoon. He and I do a just a short podcast on the markets at the end of each week for Pro Farmer. And he's always got some great insights into the markets and a pretty decent short-term outlook that does tend to check out. So I'm anxious to talk with Brian at length this afternoon. He'll be my guest on the afternoon show. So come right on back at 206 Central for the afternoon edition of AgriTalk with me, your handsome guest host. Right now, let me bring in Jackson Takish, Chief Economist at Farmer Mac. Jackson, thank you for joining us on AgriTalk this morning.
Hey, Davis, thank you for having me.
Now, let's start here. You're a chief economist. You must know something about the economy, I would expect. The Inflation Reduction Act, any thoughts, any impressions, anything you'd like to share with us, perhaps vent about? What do you like? What do you not like in this?
Well, let's hope that I have some knowledge of the economy and how it all works. I hope is a strategy sometimes, right?
Sometimes it is, yes.
I say there's a lot in there that I think will serve to reduce costs, right? I think there's some things in there are going to help with healthcare costs, or some things that are going to help with maybe energy infrastructure costs. Reducing the deficits always, always a nice bonus, particularly when you're talking about reconciliation. It's an interesting title for sure. I think there's, a lot of things that will attack the kinds of inflation that we're seeing today. And some of those are in the Inflation Reduction Act. For farmers and ranchers, I think there's a few things in there from the USDA. There's a lot in there to support renewable energy projects, which, honestly, we're seeing more and more pop up on farms and ranches all across the country. So there's certainly going to be some alternative revenue streams that could come from some of these investments. So I think there's a lot to like. And, with any bill, there's things that are pro-growth. There's things that, have to watch out for the budgets and the deficits. And so it's a little mix of both.
Well, and that's kind of my thing. And maybe I'm too fiscally conservative to really appreciate the strategy here. But in my own life, if I'm kind of struggling at some point of the month, I feel like, ooh, my budget's getting away from me. Spending more money is not the answer. Spending less. Have I got that wrong? Am I seeing this incorrectly?
Well, certainly not. I think you've got two things you can do to change that budget outlook. I do think it's more complicated when you get to a major macroeconomic powerhouse like the U.S., United States of America has a very complex sort of economic engine, and the government is a big piece of that engine. So it's maybe a tad more complex when you get to that stage. But certainly, cutting one or the other, either reducing your expenses or increasing your revenues, that's something you got to do if you're going to curb any budget shortfall.
So maybe this is maybe a better outlook on it would be, rather than, oh, they're trying to spend their way out of inflation, that maybe we're trying to shovel some coal into the engine of commerce. Could we say that?
Well, certainly anytime you're talking about infrastructure, you're trying to set yourself up for more long-term thinking. So roads, bridges, all those sorts of things that our great country does so well in so many cases, that supports commerce into the future. So that's what you want to see in any sort of infrastructure spend, is that is it going to support that growth in 3, 5, 10 years. And that's the kind of spending that will be pro-growth spending.
I have to be honest, I'm a little creeped out that they're adding more IRS employees.
Well, hey, I don't know what the employment's over at the IRS looks like, but if it's like anywhere else in this country, a few more employees never hurts. I mean, I think I've tried to eat out in restaurants the last couple of months, and it certainly has been difficult to, you know, get the level of service I was used to pre-pandemic. So, hey, maybe at the IRS, they were suffering the same fate of a shortage of labor and not the opposite.
Bro, you are really easing some of my concerns about this here. This is great. This is really great. Let's move on, because I feel all warm and fuzzy inside now about the Inflation Reduction Act. give us a general overview of some farm credit stuff. What sort of shape is the industry in?
Well, yeah, I think it's going to be a really strong year. So you talk about farmers' revenue. So it's same as anything. You talk about revenue and costs. Income side, the revenue side of the ag economy this year looks pretty good. I mean, we've had great commodity prices for much of the year, elevated certainly over 2021 and 2020. And you go back much further than that, we're way above on the revenue. And, so the flip side is what's happening on expenses. And it's been, I think all of us have dealt with inflation in one form or fashion, and farmers are dealing with it in, probably 5 different categories. So whereas maybe I'm dealing with it personally on 3 or 4 categories, farmers are dealing with it on double that space. So feed, labor, fertilizer, water, interest, expense, all those things are seeing pressure in 22. And that's going to, be the offset to some of that great revenue that's coming through the sectors. So lenders are seeing all this kind of come in. There's certainly active participants in extending farm credit. I think there's a very good amount of credit out there for farmers and ranchers who need it. So I think the bankers and farm credit institutions and all the non-bank financials out there are doing their jobs and extending credit where credit is needed. And there's a lot of activity. When you do have higher expenses, you tend to see more drawn on those operating lines. And so it's great to see the ag lenders out there across the landscape meeting the farmers and ranchers where their needs are. The other thing that, Farmer Mac is a secondary market for agricultural real estate. So that's one of the things that we care a lot about. And you've seen some pretty incredible increases in land values over the last 24 months. So a lot of activity, a lot of, lending happening against that land. That's a big source of equity for farmers, and they can tap that equity to manage interest rate risk, also to make new purchases and keep that balance sheet healthy. So all in all, I think it's a pretty healthy year for the U.S. ag economy. Some bumps, ups and downs, a lot of volatility, but overall, I think we're going to end the year pretty solid.
I don't know if you know the answer to this or not. It's something that I've been wrestling with. There does seem to be an opinion out there that a lot of non-farmer investors are looking at purchasing farmland as a hedge against inflation. Do you have any thoughts on that matter?
Yes, certainly. Land has proven to be a fairly sound inflation hedge, and you see it in the sources of inflation. A lot of times can be commodity prices, which is one of the drivers of inflation, this time around in the last year. And what grows commodities but farmland? So you do have that connection point, and a lot of investors appreciate having uncorrelated assets in their portfolio. So they look for things like farmland to introduce in their portfolio as a hedge, both to inflation, but also as uncorrelated with other asset classes. So there's kind of a dual demand for farmland in investor portfolios. I will say, the more land price is up, the harder, I think the harder it gets to pencil some of those required returns, especially in a higher interest rate environment. So that's maybe one dynamic that, low commodity price, low asset price environment, you see maybe a different set of interest than the current situation that we're into. But there's still a tremendous amount of interest out there at auctions for farm listings for both investors as well as producers and farm owners. And maybe one thing I'll point out is a lot of investors are ex-farmers. So these are farm families who, when they have a little bit of extra money, they invest in the asset that they know and love and trust. And a lot of the times that asset is farmland. So it's not always institutional investors who are out there. A lot of times those investors are either current farmers or ex-farmers.
Yeah, that's an important point. Sometimes I get stuck in the loop of thinking, well, a non-farmer investor, sure, that's some guy in New York City or L.A. sitting in an office just, you know, moving money around from here to there. But that's, I would say, probably the minority of cases. Fair?
Yeah, I think that's true. And investors are a growing, I think, block of farmland purchasers, but still a vast minority compared to either active or former farmers. So that tends to be the bulk of farm assets are owned by farmers themselves.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, in the present day, there's money to lend. There's a fair amount of demand for credit. Let's look ahead to 2023 before time gets away from us here. It sounds like budgets could be just a little bit tighter than they are here in 2022. Borrowing expectations for 2023.
Well, certainly, I think anytime you see those expenses come up, you're going to have a heightened demand for operating credit. So I think that's one area that you'll still see pretty solid demand for. But you're exactly right. The expenses are going to be the thing we talk about in the off season. So once we get to, you know, January, February, we're going to be talking about what do the budgets look like for 2023? And do we think those revenues can stay above the cost increases? And you know, currently, you look at the futures curve, you feel pretty good about opportunities for 2023, but we're certainly not going to have the same level of profitability that we did in 21 or what I think we're going to end up with in 22. So 23 is going to be a bit of a dip compared to recent years, but still likely an overall profitable year. I think the revenues are probably going to outstrip the costs. I do think we're going to be talking about interest rates too, Dave. I don't want to talk about interest rates, because I think that's going to be a big story, particularly on the operating side, that short-term interest rates have come up a bunch and they may continue to rise with the Fed's outlook.
Outstanding. Jackson Takish, Chief Economist at Farmer Mac. Thank you. It's been very insightful and I feel better. Thank you, brother. Have a great day.
My pleasure.
We will be right back on AgriTalk with Ryan Bivens from Kentucky for an update on flooding, on farming, on all things Kentucky. Stick around for more AgriTalk, everybody. Thanks for tuning in.